In Acts chapter 16, verses 11 to 40, we left Paul, Apostle Paul, crossing into Europe for the first time and seeing where God's going to lead him. He's not entirely sure, but it becomes an interesting journey. From verse 11 then, from Troas we put out to sea and sailed straight for Samothrace. And the next day, we went on to Neapolis. From there, we travelled to Philippi, a Roman colony, and the leading city of that district of Macedonia. And we stayed there several days. On the Sabbath, we went outside the city gate to the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. We sat down and began to speak to the women who had gathered there. And one of those listening was a woman from the city of Thyatira named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth. She was a worshipper of God. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. And when she and the members of the household were baptized, she invited us to her home. If you consider me a believer in the Lord, she said, come and stay at my house. And she persuaded us. To persuade the Apostle Paul, she must have been very persuasive indeed. Once when we were going to the place of prayer, we were met by a female slave who had a spirit by which she predicted the future. She earned a great deal of money for her owners by fortune-telling. She followed Paul and the rest of us, shouting, these men are servants of the Most High God who are telling you the way to be saved. She kept this up for many days. And finally, Paul became so annoyed that he turned around and said to the spirit, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to come out of her. At that moment, the spirit left her. When her owners realized that their hope of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace to face the authorities. They brought them before the magistrates and said, these men are Jews and are throwing our city into an uproar by advocating customs unlawful for us Romans to accept or practice. The crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. After they'd been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. That means if they escaped, he would be killed. Okay? And when he received these orders, he put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in the stocks. And about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once, all the prison doors flew open and everyone's chains came loose. The jailer woke up, and when he saw the prison doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself because he thought the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted, don't harm yourself. We are all here. The jailer called for lights, rushed in and fell trembling before Paul and Silas. He then brought them out and asked, sirs, what must I do to be saved? They replied, believe in the Lord Jesus and you will be saved, you and your household. Then they spoke the word of the Lord to him and to all the others in his house. At that hour of the night, the jailer took them and washed their wounds. Then immediately he and all his household were baptized. The jailer brought them into his house and set a meal before them. He was filled with joy because he had come to believe in God, he and his whole household. When it was daylight, the magistrates sent their officers to the jailer with the orders, release those men. The jailer told Paul, these magistrates have ordered that you and Silas be released. Now you can leave, go in peace. But Paul said to the officers, they beat us publicly without a trial, even though we are Roman citizens, and threw us into prison. And now do they want to get rid of us quietly? No, let them come out themselves and escort us out. The officers reported this to the magistrates, and when they heard that Paul and Silas were Roman citizens, they were alarmed. They came to appease them and escorted them from the prison, requesting them to leave the city. After Paul and Silas came out of the prison, they went to Lydia's house, where they met with the brothers and sisters and encouraged them. Then they left. Do you ever visit a place and say, it would be nice to live there? Apart from Bangor, of course. Yeah, Daniel then, says Andrew. Why not? Well, how about Philippi? Let's take a look at Paul's journey on the map on the screen. And you'll see that Philippi... Oh, yes, Philipponense it's got down there. I don't know why it hasn't got Philippi. It's down in that part of Greece. At the top. Thank you. You can see my geography. That region is not great. And they've crossed from Troas into Philippi, and they're going to travel much further. But right at that part, just for those of you who've had your holidays there, it's a very nice place to go. Built by King Philip II of Macedon, father of Alexander the Great. Fortress city, some 8 miles from the sea, a fertile region, springs, gold was mined there. And in 168 BC, the Romans took it over. Here are a few of the Roman remains that are there. They built the Via Egnatia, which went east from west, from the Adriatic coast to the Byzantium, the main overland route that was east-west. So Philippi is a rich town on the M4. In other words, it's ready. And a big event was in 42 BC. There was a huge battle just west of the town where Brutus and Cassius, those of you who read Shakespeare, those are the two guys who assassinated Julius Caesar. They fought Antony and Octavian. Antony was the guy who had the long affair with Cleopatra. Yeah? Those of you who've seen the film will immediately know all about that. So there was a big sort of battle for who would be emperor between Brutus and Cassius and Antony and Octavian. Antony and Octavian won, but then Octavian and Antony fell out, and they had another battle a little later, which Octavian won. And he changed his name. He became Caesar Augustus. And that just might ring a few bells in your mind from the Christmas story. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree. So there is a sort of link between Philippi and the big battle there and the Roman emperor and that was on the throne when Jesus was born. He embarked on a major building program in Philippi, populated it with veterans of the wars, and they had special rights. They had legal and property rights. They were exempt from poll tax and land tax. And the population in its day was about 10,000, slightly smaller than Bangor, without the university or Tesco's. And it was very good. It was a really nice place to live. And notable that Paul went straight there. And they were proud of their city. Everybody who was born there was automatically a Roman citizen. And they would worship their local gods, and they would worship the emperor. There were not clearly many Jews there. Jews, if there were 12 men, they could form a synagogue. But Paul apparently is not mentioned going near the synagogue, which suggests that there weren't that many Jews there. A great place to live and a great place to have a church, and it's very soon going to have one. I remind you that as we've looked through the book of Acts, a couple of Luke's great themes are giving and going. That kind of sums up Luke's idea what the Christian faith is all about. You give and you go. And I've been hearing just earlier about one of our flock going to South Africa. Well, this is what the New Testament's all about. It's about giving and going. And this story is marked by generosity, by greatness of character, by forgiveness, also by conflict. So let's take a look at the generosity that marks the Christian leader. We'll jump straight through, can we, Roger, to verse 14 and 15. And we get the 14, 15, next one please. And we should get on the screen Bible verses about Lydia. First convert that we know of in Europe. There might have been others, but it's the first one we know of in Europe, the first Christian leader in Europe, and it's a woman. And she's a businesswoman. She's in what we would call the rag trade, but she supplies Gucci and Armani. She only supplies the really posh stuff. A dealer in purple cloth. Purple was the most expensive cloth. The dye used to make it was very rare, very expensive. So she only supplied the higher end of the fashion market. And she has a Greek name, but she's a worshipper of God, it says. So she is clearly seeking God in the Jewish community. And she's something of an irresistible force because she persuades Paul to stay with her. And somebody to persuade Paul was not easy. He had this very strong mind, as you know. Jesus told us that when we go to places, we should seek out people of peace. There are people of peace everywhere we go, people who are open to hearing about God, people who are not turned against Christ and his gospel. And she is certainly a person of peace. And in her house, the church in Philippi is going to have its birth. And it's going to be a great church. It's going to be a wonderful church. It's going to be one of the key churches of the New Testament. It's going to be one of the model churches for all time. It's going to be one of the best churches ever. And it's going to take form. It's going to be born in Lydia's living room. She was rich enough to have a house big enough to host the church, as well as putting up Paul and Silas. Lydia's generosity is stamped all over the church that's born in her living room. If you follow Paul's missionary journeys, the church at Philippi supports him financially. In fact, at the beginning, it's the only church that supports him financially. Right from its birth, this church begins giving its wealth away and supporting the Christian mission. Giving and going is personified in the church at Philippi. It is the best church for giving and going. And it begins with a person of peace, with a person of generosity. The only way to be a great church is to be a generous church. You can be a big church, but not a good one. You can be a small church and a great church. But the only way to be a great church is to be a generous one. There's no other way. You cannot have greatness without generosity. The two go together in the gospel. God did not put us, you and me, on the earth to be rich. He did not put us on the earth to be poor. He put us on the earth to be generous. And as a church, we must personify the generosity of God who's given us life, who's given us breath, who's given us everything we need. So generosity marks the Christian leader. And Lydia is generous, generosity personified. But the second thing that marks Christian leaders is conflict. Conflict marks the Christian mission as well, sadly. If we go on to verses 19 and 21... we see Paul and Silas completely and utterly unjustly accused. We've read the story of how a young woman is freed from bondage to evil spirits, and her owners turn on Paul and Silas. Again and again in the book of Acts, you find these words, the church grew, strengthened, and grew in numbers. Those are key words as you read through the book of Acts. But increasingly, they're under threat. As the church grows, it becomes increasingly under threat. And the world doesn't always listen to arguments. The world is sometimes personified by a guy I saw on a TV documentary many years ago. It was a documentary about boxing made by two feminists. Now, you can imagine what kind of documentary you get about boxing if it's made by two feminists. And it was quite funny, really, to see the way they went about it. But they interviewed a group of boxers from Cardiff. And they're okay, these lads, you know. But the whole thing was cut and edited to make the whole thing look stupid. And they had one poor guy they interviewed. And he said with that lovely Cardiff accent, he said, I can't argue. Like, I'd rather fight than argue. Can't argue. My girl, she says, you're not intelligent enough to argue. And she's right. And the world is often not intelligent enough to argue. It fights. The world will often not listen to an argument because it's easier to fight and to harass and to suppress. I'm the kind of person who avoids conflict. I'm not a confrontational person at all. I hate it. But the truth is that conflict does mark the mission of the church, and it's a fact. Generosity and conflict. But the final thing I want to say is this, that the greatness of character wins the Christian argument. What wins in the end in this city is greatness of character. That's what makes it work. That's what makes the church grow. That's what eventually makes this church suddenly burst into life and become very quickly one of the key churches in the known world. And it's greatness of character we see, well, that in an earthquake. An earthquake well-timed can help as well. Paul and Silas are beaten severely, and they're put into prison. Now, that's illegal. First, there's no trial. And secondly, they're both Roman citizens. Paul was born in the city of Tarsus and therefore born into Roman citizenship. And Roman citizens were not allowed to be beaten without a trial. But they weren't given the chance to explain. We don't know why they weren't listened to. Perhaps if it had been me, I'd have been screaming my head off. But I'm a Roman citizen. But I don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. The Bible doesn't say. But it happened. We had a while back, a friend of ours was staying in our house, a man of God, he preached here, Roy Godwin. And Roy and Daphne were chatting over the meal table with us. We had a long talk. He was talking about people that made massive impression on him. And he was talking about a Chinese lady, a Chinese woman, who is one of the great leaders of the Chinese house church movement. And she was telling how, this is going back 20 years in China, when the Christian faith was a lot more repressed, that when anybody wanted to be a Christian leader and wanted to be a church planter, they were given training. And to be trained, that took place underground in caves, because there was a cave system where they knew they would never be found. They would spend 3 weeks underground in these caves being taught how to plant a church. And one of the first lessons they were given was how to cope mentally with being beaten severely. That was one of the first things they learnt, along with all the Bible stuff, was how to survive a beating and carry on planting a church. On the sharp end of Christian mission, it can get violent. Many years ago, I heard a guy from a communist country, Richard Wurmbrand. He was brought up when Romania was at the height of communism. And he was a Lutheran pastor who was thrown into prison. He's in solitary confinement for about 11 years. Severely beaten, severely abused. And it was fascinating hearing this man's testimony. He writes this about that period. Alone in my cell, cold, hungry and in rags, I danced for joy every night. Sometimes I was so filled with joy that I felt I would burst if I did not give it expression. There's a greatness of character that a Christian assumes, that a Christian takes, that overcomes evil, that overcomes persecution, that overcomes justice. Paul and Silas have a greatness of character that even though they're beaten, even though they're in jail, come midnight, they're singing and they're praying, and it says the other prisoners are listening. I've no doubt at all that Paul and Silas were praying for the other prisoners too. There's a greatness of character that sees them through. And the jailer comes, and Paul instantly forgives the jailer. There's no question of the jailer deserving forgiveness. Paul simply forgives him. And it turns out that God has a purpose for the life of this man. And if we turn to verses 29 to 32, the jailer, the doors of the prison are open, and if the prisoners escape, the jailer's life will be taken. He will be executed. And he sees that his life is over. It's not just his career that's finished. His life is over. His children are going to be orphans. His wife is going to be a widow. He takes out the sword and decides to fall on his sword and kill himself. But Paul sees him silhouetted in the doorway. And Paul shouts out, don't do that. we're still here. And the jailer's been wondering what's going on, because these guys should have been complaining, they should have been whinging, but they're singing songs of praise to God, and he's spooked by the whole thing. And then the earthquake comes, he's a seriously frightened man. So he asks, well, it's the best question in the Bible, isn't it? Sirs, what must I do to be saved? What must I do to be saved? And Paul doesn't have long to give an answer. So basically he condenses the New Testament down to one sentence. Believe in the Lord Jesus and you will be saved, you and your household. Gospel message in a nutshell. It's all the time Paul has. He's got one shot at this. He says, believe in Jesus. And the guy says, I want to hear more about Jesus. And they take him out, take Paul and Silas out of prison. And bathe their wounds, and they hear about Jesus. And the man becomes a follower of Jesus. Can I just say that if that is you this morning, and you've considered it, you've seen all there is to see about the Christian faith, you think, but you want to learn more, and you want to go deeper, and you want to know God in this way in your own life, and you say, yeah, do you know what? I want to believe in Jesus too. We're going to have a time of prayer in a moment, but if you'd like to invite Jesus into your heart, there'll be other people coming forward at different times for prayer, but if when our ministry team comes alongside you, would you just say to them, look, I want to be a believer in Jesus too. And they've got a little card with a prayer on, and they'll take you through the prayer. They'll very happily pray the prayer with you to receive Jesus. Preaching through a megaphone is not enough. If you haven't got greatness of character, you won't make any impact on the world. Generosity, greatness of character, the power of God, those came together to start one of the great churches. Great character, great generosity, great sacrifice, great prayer and praise, and a timely earthquake come together. One of the great moments in church history, the birth of the Church of Philippi.